Okay, thank you. Yes, I have actually sounded very optimistic. As the preceding speakers have made clear, we are at a critical moment when we already know the power of the new technologies for both good and bad outcomes, for contributing to human well-being or for harming society and threatening our best values. So we have causes for optimism as well as for pessimism. Of course, in the current times, it is difficult to be optimistic, and yet history can be a source of hope. The first thing to note is that we are midway along the fifth technological revolution. I'm not going to discuss the fourth or the fifth, that's a complicated issue. To me, it's the fifth, and it means that we can learn from the previous four. And what my research since the 1980s has shown is that the pattern of diffusion of such major changes in market economies begins by a turbulent process of creative destruction, forcing the adoption of the new, more productive technologies while destroying jobs, skills, industries, and even whole regions. The process divides society into winners and losers. On the bright side, there are new millionaires, new successful products, emerging industries and countries, amazing new technologies, as well as powerful infrastructures. First, there were railways and telegraphs, then steamships, tramways and electricity, then automobiles, highways and airplanes, and now mobile phones and the almost incredible internet. But while some benefit from all this, many others suffer. And the bumpy road includes booms and crashes, after which the recessions, violence, and resentment of the victims can lead to the success of autocratic and populist leaders. It has happened every time. It is only then, when the dangers and the harmful consequences of the new technologies become fully visible. It's only then that society tends to wake up to the urgencies and bold leaders decide to tilt the playing field, to tilt it, even if it's level, tilt it with a socially positive direction, a positive directionality for innovation and investment. And that is when the golden ages have occurred. The Victorian boom, the Belle Époque in Europe, what the Americans call the Progressive Era, the post-war boom that the French refer to as the Glorious 30. And that is how progress occurs in capitalism, unequally, irregularly, unfairly, but undoubtedly. The process coming from the satanic mills of early industrialization to what we can define today as middle-class lives in the welfare states of the advanced countries has indeed been a very bumpy road. The difficult question is whether policy could shape the current information revolution towards a smart, green, fair, and global path. The answer begins by seeing how previous revolutions have been shaped in different countries and even in different systems. The same mass production Fordist revolution was shaped by the autocratic regimes of Stalin and Hitler and by the various democracies of the West according to their values. But it is interesting to note that even in these, a proactive state was necessary. The democracies of the West reincorporated the state that had been put out of the way in the US, for instance, in the Roaring Twenties. Markets alone simply cannot do it. There is no way that markets will solve the social, environmental problems, etc., on their own, because markets are the context for markets. The decisions that are common to everybody, the notion about possibilities in the market is actually a common context. And that context is either created by the state or not created at all. And then we just have like the Far West, which we've been having for the last 40 years, as Shoshana just showed us. It was only when Keynesian policies were fully adopted that dynamic growth and full employment were achieved. It was when labor unions were empowered for collective bargaining that the growth in productivity turned into increasing wages. And it was only when these higher wages were accompanied by unemployment insurance and pensions that the shift to mass production from mass consumption could occur. Of course, we can question the environmental consequences of such a golden age. And we can also point that it was only golden for the advanced West, leaving the so-called third world out. It was meant to produce cheap energy and materials. But that is what the history of capitalism has shown. Each revolution incorporates new layers and new countries into the good life and leaves others behind. This is perhaps the first time that we could have a truly global golden age. So that is my answer to your question.